And welcome back, everybody, to the Between Two Wheels podcast. This is Tyler Yonke, cycling news commentary from the world in California. On today's show, we are going to look, 2019 was probably great for you. At least it was for the viewing perspective. We're going to do the male rider of the year, the female rider of the year, the team of the year, the best one day race of the year, the best grand tour stage of the year, some things that make you go, some winners and losers. The mailbag section. We've got some interesting stuff there. I'm Tyler Yonke. Welcome. 155 episodes, year in review. Well, we're not going to pretend. We are going to take this on. We're going to talk about some of the best things in the world tour. Some of them relate to some local stuff in the Northern California scene. But for the most part, for this episode, I'm going to give you your year in review. Like I said, world tour level, some male, female stars, some great things that happened, do a little recap, give you some nostalgia as to how the season went for you, maybe, and some of the things that caught my eye. I'm also compiling, I'm getting it together as we speak. Well, not as we speak, but as we're progressing here, I'm getting together a segment, kind of like a year in review for the female riders, local and the world tour. And I'm trying to do kind of some ahead, what's coming ahead for the females and the women's side for cycling, pro cycling, Northern California. So I'm looking for, if you have some input, some of the highlights that you've had from that, you want to send me some links or anything, some commentary about from anybody, I'll take that in. I'm just compiling some things. Maybe we'll try to find a good guest host for that segment as well, someone to come in or even Skype in, and we can talk about that stuff. Let's just hit right into it. Some of these are going to be maybe a little disjointed, but we're going to go right into some of the greatest stuff that happened for the year 2019. Topic number one. We'll start off with the best male rider of the year. Who is your favorite male rider of the year for this year? Who stood out for you? I mean, there's so many different categories we can say, but I'm going to go right off of some of the projected. Mine is best male rider of the year. Well, let's back up a little bit. I think it's going to be, I actually am going to save that one for a little bit later, and I'm going to go to the best female ride of the year. It's a little bit of a homegrown, in a sense, favorite, because I'm picking the U.S. Chloe Dygart. She is a no-brainer pick to me. She's dominated on the Colorado Classic. She came into that race. You know, I've watched some of that, and I'm like, it's a little bit much the way she's dominating that field in general, but it was almost slightly embarrassing the way she showed everybody up. But what I saw of her at Worlds more than confirmed that maybe she's just on a different level. Obviously she is, but in general. And showing the world championships, being able to go in there and getting the individual time trial world championships by such a dramatic fashion and time. She did it without a power meter. That's a different topic all into itself. Just went off of how she felt, and she just kept feeling better and better. And then I think she was fifth in the road race. Some pretty stellar, you know, climbers and riders there, and she came through like a champ, getting fifth place, which is really good, a good follow-up to how she did in the time trial. So, look, she's my vote for the female rider of the year. She's also, I think she won Chico Stage Race. Shout-out to that. Her mom was a follower of our show for a while, made some comments. Maybe she still is. Good to see you out there and to hear from you if that's the case. Chloe Dygart Owens, had a few years ago, she also had a big concussion in the Tour of California. We saw her at the finish of that stage in Elk Grove. She crashed just before the finish. She didn't look too good coming across the line. You know, there's some speculation as to what she's going to do, and what she did was she dominated. So good for her. Really proud of that. And you look, Chico Stage Race winner. Of course, female rider of the year. Be interested to see what she does going forward. I think she's still in 2020, and if that team is going to get a little bit more international invite. I know last year they went down to the Tour Down Under. It'll be interesting to see if she's got some interest in showing her efforts early on in the year. Okay, best team of the year. DaQuinta Quickstep has by far the most successful of the year. They had over 60 wins this year, but did they land a podium on the Grand Tour? Not so much. Jumbo Visma on all three of their Grand Tours. They were third in the Giro with Roglic. They were third in the Tour de France with Stephen Kruijswijk. And then they were first in the Tour and the Vuelta with Roglic. So obviously Roglic is a common core there. Next year they're going to have Dumoulin coming over. And adding Tom Dumoulin is going to be an interesting thing since they've already put out their Tour de France lineup. So who's your pick of the year? I mean, look, it's hard to say. Dequena Quickstep is not your pick of the year. Maybe you break it down into who's your most prolific winning team. Okay, Dequena Quickstep. But who showed the best in the three Grand Tours that mattered when it mattered? Maybe the consistency there. And so interesting, because we'll talk about some of the tours too. Roglic in the Vuelta not having a very good team around him. And then by contrast, some of the same riders, but by contrast over in the Vuelta, kind of, having the team support that he needed. So Jumbo was definitely the best Grand Tour stage team of the year. While Dequena Quickstep, it's hard to vote against the Wolfpack unless you just want to vote against the Wolfpack, which is usually what I like to do. How about one best one-day race of the year? Well, hands down for me, that was Amstel Gold. Matthew Vanderpoel was unreal with his late race antics, legitimately pulling everyone back in the last 15, 20K, and then doing I'll use the word legitimate, lead out for everybody in the last, inside the last K, 700 meters as a lead out, but it actually ended up being the win. It was pretty awesome. Look, and no one really expected that. Well, did they? I don't know. I guess you could say you kind of expected. You didn't expect that kind of story to come out of Amstel Gold, and it was great. It was superb to see Vanderpoel. And look, in early season Vanderpoel, he's the man to see, and then we kind of saw Wout van Aert kind of take over there. But Vanderpoel is going to be a real interesting one coming up. I heard an English commentator talking about that Finnish win, and I used the word it was a heist, which is exactly what it was. No one expected him in those closing last 2K to win. I mean, other guys were up the road. I think Fuglsang was up there, and he ended up coming through and getting the win, and it was pretty impressive. Kudos to him. My winner for the best one day, kind of a classics race of the year. Okay. Best Grand Tour stage of the year. Stage, just a single stage of the year. This is tough. I had some top fives in there. I really like what Pinot did on Bastille Day. He was very impressive winning in the mountains there. I think that day he dropped Bernal. Very impressed with that. You had another one, just kind of a home favorite there, was Sepp Kuss winning in the Vuelta. Really impressed with that. Any of the multiple stages that Pogačar won in the Vuelta, also really exciting to see. Was there a favorite one in the Giro? Well, I did like the one where Lopez punched the fan. That was pretty exciting to see. And that was actually a really tough day as well. So I think that was the one they were supposed to go over the Gavia, and they rerouted it around. And, I think Hugh Carthy, Dombrowski, they were up there in the finish of that. Giulio Ciccone had a great day. But obviously we know Carapaz ended up winning that thing. So those are some of my favorite Grand Tour stage racing of the year. But then again, you got to kind of back up, because the whole tour, and we'll get to that as well, the whole tour had amazing stages. Alaphilippe winning, like I said, Pinot winning, the hailstorm issue, Nibali finally winning, Wout van Aert winning, Wout van Aert going down. Could I say more? Oh, look. Maybe I'm giving it away here, what the best Grand Tour is of the year. Best Grand Tour stage, like I said, that one's might be tough. Honestly, it might be Pinot. I love the climbing. I love how he put that one down, and he just kept accelerating, and putting everyone in the hurt box, and finally got away. And then, later on, his knee was too hurt to get going on. Best Grand Tour GC winner. This one, look, there's only three Grand Tour winners for the year, right? There's Richard Carapaz from Ecuador, winning for Movistar, winning the Giro, the first one. Then you had Egan Bernal from Colombia with Team Ineos, winning the Tour de France. And then you had Primoz Roglic, a Slovenian rider for Jumbo Visma, winning the Vuelta. But what is the best Grand Tour winner this year? Well, it's got to be Roglic, right? Third in the Giro, being the height. Being the highest expected winner of that one. not skipping out on the Tour and then going in and doing the Vuelta and actually coming out on top of that one, kind of learning from what his mistakes and his team mistakes in the Giro to actually finally capitalize for the Vuelta. So I'm giving him as the best Grand Tour stage winner of the year. And was there anybody else really in close? Look, Ineos, they didn't get a single win, stage win, in the Giro, in the Tour this year. Did they get one anywhere else? I think they did. But none of their notable riders, like Egan Bernal, won the end up winning the Tour de France. He did not get credit for his win on stage 19. Were they the best? No, you know, that was a Froome issue. Okay, some other categories here. Best mini stage race of the year. Mini stage race of the year. So you're looking at, look, the early season, you've got a bunch of these ones in the spring, and Roglic was coming on fire. He was winning those. He was winning some stages of those. But which one was the most dramatic? Well, they're also fun to watch. The most dramatic and significant probably was the Dauphiné. The Dauphiné, the lead up to the Tour de France. That one you had Wout van Aert. He won a sprint stage. He then wins a time trial. You're like, what the heck is going on? Several big names on that went out with sickness and kind of ruined their tour, which were Richie Porte had that. I know Mike Woods, I think, got sick as well. Then you had the Chris Froome fake crash. Was it fake? I don't know. But you had the Chris Froome crash, and that set up, you know, flags everywhere. And in the end, you had Fuglsang winning the Dauphiné over TJ Van Garderen by like 40 seconds or something, around there, 25, somewhere inside a minute. And you're like, hey, maybe these two guys, because, I mean, Fuglsang had, and we'll talk about him a little bit later, he had quite the year himself. And so maybe it gave a little hope for TJ, or did it? Anyway, I thought for my bang for the buck, the one that really came out with the biggest significance out of there was obviously the Chris Froome crash. Following that, you had the Tour Swiss. And I think Geraint Thomas, I'm not sure if he was in the, I think he was in the Dauphiné this year, because last year was in the Swiss. Oh, no, he was in the Swiss this year, and then he got hurt and skipped out. So that one had Egan Bernal and Rohan Dennis, and it was just kind of not as fun to watch. So we have that best mini stage race, kind of the 7-day stage race of the year. And look, we even followed and were part of the media caravan for the Tour of California. It did not excite me to the extent that the Dauphiné did. Tour of California is not going to be obviously around this year, but next year. But this year, you know, we had Travis McCabe. The Team USA really came out and they showed some really good promise and excitement in that race. They were always in the break. They were looking for everything. Good day up to the second day up to Tahoe. You had the DeCoin Quickstep rider. I'm trying to remember his name. Nick, DeCoin Quickstep in the Tour of California. So just recapping. Remember that they had kind of their. Pardon me for forgetting his name, but he's kind of a classics rider. He has, you know, good stage win up to Heavenly to Truckee, I'm sorry, to Tahoe. I think one of him or his teammate then next few days when they're going over to San Jose and is going down the hill. I mean, he just looked horrible trying to track along the descent there. It looked like he was going to wreck. And then you had TJ Van Garderen wrecking outside the 3K. The UCI gives him a break on that. And then you're like, oh, maybe TJ is still going to be in this. And then just falters amazingly at the foot of Baldy. And we got... Once again, Higuita in this Pogačar coming through on that one. Who to watch in 2020? Well, 2020, we've got Chris Froome. We just mentioned him, you know, the fake crash that he had, faking his injury to avoid a drug suspension. Look, that's kind of teasing on that. I put out a debunking video where I actually think his wreck was legit. And actually, maybe this will prove it this year where he might not be the rider. Because I think his injuries and his comeback is going to might be a little tough for him. Wout van Aert, he also had a dramatic crash. He crashed in the time trial at the Tour de France, the one that was won by Alaphilippe. He bangs into one of the barriers, ripped his leg up really bad, and he missed the rest of the season. So it would be interesting to see how impactful that race and that crash was going forward for him. And it'd be nice to see him kind of coming back with, I don't know why I connect always he and Vanderpool, I guess because they've done cyclocross, but they're both exciting racers and they're both immediately getting the results. Quinn Simmons, 18, current world champion, junior world champion. He signed with Trek. He wasn't so serious about his prospects going forward that he decided to skip coming home for Christmas, and he's just staying out and training. I think he's going to do some Kanza riding as well. So, look, if he can race as good as he grows his beard, he should be just fine. Katie Courtney, the mountain bike world champion, former world champion. She wasn't this year. She won a bunch of races still. Northern California prospect and prodigy, and she's amazing. And it will be interesting to see if she follows up on that. I would actually like to see her ride on the road just a little bit, but I think the money and her notoriety and what she's got going on, her gig there, is just too good for her to give up. Because look, it's like cross. If you're good in mountain biking and you're good in cross, look, she was just on the cover of Outside Magazine. I bought it. I'm like, oh, this will be good. It'll be a nice, cool story about her. It was maybe two or three paragraphs, and it was really shitty. Sorry to say. I'm like, I bought this. It is a crappy magazine, by the way. Jumbo Visma, they'll be really interesting to watch this year as well. Based on their signings, they got rid of Nilsson Palace, but they kept Sepp Kuss. They brought a bunch of other riders in. Tony Martin's still there. You've got Dumoulin coming in. So it'll be, you know, they kind of bulked themselves up. And they already put out their, I think I just mentioned this, they already put out their Tour de France 2020 Tour de France lineup. It's a bit early, and because you never know what's going to happen. But they've got Kreuzwick, Dumoulin, Roglic all scheduled to go. I think Sepp Kuss made that list. I think I'll have to look at that again. Formidable. It will be a fun tour. If their top guy can, you know, overcome the Sky Train and all that goes on with that, it will be an interesting one, especially the way this tour is with the short, punchy stuff this year. I'm looking forward to July. Another guy to watch, Travis McCabe. Look, he had a great year on the Tour of California. He was on the USA team. He's on Floyd de Leadville. They're going under or what have you, but he ended up with his almost win on stage one of the Tour of California, kind of brought some notoriety on himself and some of the bigger teams. And he ended up signing with Israel Startup Nation, formerly into Israel Cycling Academy. They're going to get their world tour going. He'll get his world tour ticket punched this year. He gets a chance finally to do that. So at 30, congrats to him. And it will be, what a tough position to be in though. I mean, he finally gets his chance to come up there, and you know, as a younger guy, it usually takes a few years. You maybe develop and you work for someone, but he's not really the age that he can just sit back and show him what a good domestique he can be. So you know, if he gets his chances though, I think he'll take it. Some other guys, I'm going to mention these all in a slew: Evenepoel, Pogačar, Ian Garrison, Bernal, all in different stages, but all really young and exciting to watch. Should be, and look, got some Americans coming up, so it'd be interesting to see what we have there. Chloe Dargaard-Owen, I am thrilled to see her, first of all, how she did this year, and I'm super excited to see what she has possibly coming up for next year, because, you know, if she can just go along with and progress onto what she just had, talk about amazing time. And I mean, you know, who knows what she can do. I don't know that she'll ever be able to kind of come through as the best, you know, climber in the world. She just doesn't have the physique for that, but it'll be interesting to see what else she can do. Let's take a look at some other categories here just for the year and who got ranked as what. And some of these are going to be kind of ridiculous because it's not going to be much. I'm going off of Pro Cycling Stats. So we're going to say who the best climbers, sprinters, some all-arounders, and all those things. This are, according to Pro Cycling Stats, the best climber ranking. I don't know how they rank this, but it is interesting to see because you've got some good climbers here. Top of the list, let's start at 10th place here and just kind of go up. Bauke Mollema, he had a good Amstel Gold. Julian Alaphilippe, wonderful Tour de France. We'll talk about that. Rafał Majka in seventh place. Egan Bernal in sixth. Of course, one of the best climbers. I think for pound, he might be the best climber. For me, he's not the most exciting climber because he does kind of keep it in reserve. And I don't know if he's just, that's the way he's learning with Sky, but he's not as the most punchy. Tadej Pogačar in fifth place. He was exciting to watch this year. Nairo Quintana in fourth, moving over to Arkea Samsic from Movistar. I guess he was quite cheerful about that. Jakob Fuglsang, third place from Astana. Alejandro Valverde coming in at like 400 years old in second place. And the top climber they said this year was Primoz Roglic. Roglic, look, he rode spectacularly in the Vuelta coming off of the Giro, having some disappointment there. And I think, well, obviously he learned from the Giro, but great climber. He did not get in trouble. And when there were a few times that he got in trouble in the Vuelta, he's able to claw himself back. And those were usually just like some mechanical type of issues, not like the Giro where he had to fight. So evidently they're saying he's the best climber of the year. Look, that's not quite what you have for when you have the Tour de France and the climbers jerseys. Those are just kind of different types of people. So how about the sprinters for this year? Well, I think it was really interesting. And we'll go over the sprinters, and then we're going to go over sprinters by wins, because I think it's interesting to see who got the most wins out of the year as well. But they're saying that the best sprinter of the year on ranking was, well, let's do all the top five here. Ilya Viviani, top five. He's no longer going to be a DaQuanta Quick-Step. I'm not remembering exactly who he's going to this next year, but he moved on. Sam Bennett in fourth place, Bora Hansgrohe. He is going back. He's going to DaQuanta Quick-Step. Pascal Ackermann of Bora, he might get the big call up then for Bora, since they're going to be missing out on Bennett. Did Viviana go to Bora? I don't know. Sagan's there. Sagan ends up ninth on this list, so we're not even going down to him. Caleb Ewing, second place sprinter for the year with Lotto Soudal. And then the top one, Dylan Groenewegen. Dylan Groenewegen, he had a pretty good year, I would say. And let's go in here for wins, because I think that's going to give us kind of an indication of your best sprinters. So most wins on the season, top the list, our number one sprinter, Dylan Groenewegen, with 15. Okay, 15, he got 4 seconds and 4/3. So out of that, he is really, really close to winning all the time. Sam Bennett, though, 13 wins, 9 seconds, and 3/3 in second place. I'm going obviously in the reverse order here, but Groenewegen deserved to get the number one call on this one. And then he had a bunch of them tied at 13. Pascal Ackermann, he also had 13 wins, 8 seconds and 6/3. Primoz Roglic on the win channel here, getting it in, 13 wins as well. So he's basically tied for second. 13 wins, 6 seconds, and 7/3. Really good season. Look, he got wins everywhere. And I'm going to finish this off here. Who else was in the top 10? Excuse me. Caleb Ewing was 10th on this list with 11 wins. So everyone, talking about 11 people or so, Ilya Viviani had, it was in 8th place with 11 wins, Alaphilippe with 12, and then some two guys that Orlius Arlior and Onar Balkan, neither one on World Tour teams. Impressive with the wins. How about teams? We talked about best team of the year. Well, it's really tough to say it wasn't the best, DaQuanta Quick-Step, because when you look at just team wins, it's really impressive. Number one team, 68 wins, 36 second places, and 36 third places. That's just always being on the podium, unless it's a Grand Tour overall victory. Team Jumbo Visma in second place with 51 wins, so a mere 17 behind, 28 seconds and 38 thirds. So DaQuanta beats them on all fronts except for the third place finishes. And then Bora in third place at 47 wins, 36 and 35 for second, third. But the worst, I think the worst World Tour team here on the list comes in with, I think it's Katusha. I saw that. So Hagens Berman has 5 wins, and right above, 5 wins, and right above them, tied is Katusha. There's a bunch of Conti teams above them. Who else comes in here? I mean, man, they're way down the list. Rally has 6 wins. Team Dimension Data, 7 wins. They had a really poor start. There was one point they didn't have any. Nipo Van Vini Fantini, they had 7 wins. Who else do we have here? Elevate KHS with 8 wins. You know, that's a guy to put on the list there. Their main rider for Elevate KHS this year. I don't know why I slipped my head here, my the name, but Great Tour of Utah, and he got the call up also for Israel Startup Nation. Team Illuminate, 10 wins. Floyd's of Leadville, 10 wins. Trek, 11 wins. Yeah, EF Education, I think they had somewhere around 17 wins for EF. So Not the best situation you have for some of the riders there. How about the best individual? We'll call it the best classics one day racer of the year. Once again, year in review. Some of this is review, some of it's not. But if you don't know some of these names, we're starting off here. I'm going to actually go with number 11. Matteo Trentin comes in number 11. He had that's his ranking for the one day racing on the year. And I say him because he actually had some, he had some good stage wins. He had some good one day races, good all around rider. Alejandro Valverde in 10th, Oliver Nason in 9th, Malcolm Olimar in 8th, Elia Viviani in 7th, Jakob Fuglsang in 6th, Matthew Vanderpoel 5th place, Julian Alaphilippe in 4th, Pascal Ackermann in 3rd, Alexander Kristoff in 2nd place, and the number one day racer of the year is CCC's own Greg Van Avermaet. Good for him. Let's talk about time trialing before we move on. And we finally got an American on one of the lists here. As far as time trial goes, you've got 10th place, Matthias Brandl, Thomas De Gendt in 9th, but in 8th place, Lawson Craddock of EF Education First, just behind the Rohan Dennis, who's listed without a team here. We know he's going to Ineos. Jos van Emden, and then Patrick Bevin in 5th, Stefan Klung in 4th, Filippo Ganna in 3rd for Team Ineos. Victor Campenaerts, the current hour record holder of Lotto Soudal, in 2nd place. And the number one time trial of the year is also the number one climber of the year, Primoz Roglic. So look at that. You can, if you're a good climber and you're a good time trialer, good chance you might be the best Grand Tour racer of 2019 as well. Which I gave to Primoz Roglic. Should we talk about prologues? Maybe not. I don't think it really matters. How about GC ranking? In the GC ranking, we've got all these guys should be familiar to you. Carapaz is in 12th place. He won the Giro. Adam Yates in 8th place. Fuglsang in 6th. Nairo Quintana in 4th. Alejandro Valverde in 3rd. Egan Bernal in 2nd. Primoz Roglic in 1st place by a pretty good amount, points-wise, how they rack these up. So, look. Primoz, he had quite the year. He might be the, you know, as I said, rider of the year. Let's talk about best races. So best Grand Tour. Look, first time nations, all Grand Tour winners, the Giro with Ecuador, Tour de France with Colombia, the Vuelta with Slovenia. They had two on the podium with Roglic and Pogacar. I'm going to just give you a brief little reminder of each of these races, and then we'll kind of pick one, and I think you might be able to tell. It's probably the Tour. The Giro. Roglic came in as a hot favorite. His team was immediately weakened by the loss of Lorenz de Plus, who got sick right away. And then they had Sepp Kuss. Wasn't quite the Sepp Kuss of the Vuelta. So he came off to a rough start. He wins, I think, the prologue. Roglic does. He starts out looking good. But most notably, he had some problems. Most notably on stage 15, he got a mechanical. He got a crash. And then the team car is not there to help him because the director and the driver are off and doing a nature break. He gets someone else's bike, he crashes again. It's going all downhill from there. And it didn't end up being the Giro that Roglic was hoping for, but it made it a little more exciting for everyone else. Also a breakout ride for Giulio Ciccone. He had, I think, the blue climber's jersey there. He also had, I believe, did he win or was close? He had the yellow jersey, I believe, at the Tour de France in between Alaphilippe. And so he kind of had a breakout. But the real breakout and shocker, in a sense, was Richard Carapaz. If you thought you had him on your list for winning the Giro, you're probably high. Just wasn't going to be the guy. I mean, look, he got the podium the year before when Froome ended up winning, but you know, you had Pinot, you had Roux, all a bunch of these guys, Yates just kind of exploding in the last few days, and Carapaz just kind of sneaks his way on there. He'd been going back and forth with Lopez, so good for him. It wasn't necessarily a surprise and shocker. Maybe you weren't that high, or maybe you were just a little bit tingly, and so you put him on there as a good guess. Good guess for you. He ends up winning the thing, but look, it started out pretty good for him. Stage 4, he wins from a small group, including Caleb Ewing and Roglic. A little pop-up to the finish. You're like, it's going to go good. And then you had on the Giro, you had UAE come to it with Visconti. He gets the Valerio Conti, sorry. He gets up winning the jersey from stages 6 through 11. Then his teammate Jan Polak gets it for stage 12. But on stage 14 is when Carapaz basically took over. He gets a breakaway. He's in the main front group. They've got two mountain passes to go, 27K to go. He squirts off the front. No one's bringing him back. I think Yates comes into about a minute 20 behind him at the finish, and Roglic and the others, Nibali, they're about 2 minutes behind. And from there on out, it was just racing for second place. You had Lopez hitting someone in the head, a fan that knocked him down on the side of the road. You had Dombrowski and Hugh Carthy both going for top 11, 12, somewhere right in that spot. So it was pretty good for EF on that front. Other than that, though, decent Giro. Yates didn't solidify. Nibali was there. It was okay, but pretty good for Carapaz. And then what does he do to repay Movistar for their dedication and infighting? He goes to Team Ineos. Tour de France. Look, Tour de France 2019 might be one of the best we've seen for many decades. It's definitely my pick for the Grand Tour of the year. This year, the French had two pre-race favorites that look like they can actually do something. Bardet and Pinot, both looking very good. And you're expecting something from them. But before they are able to take to the fore, Julian Alaphilippe comes out and wins, what, stage 3-4? To the excitement of all the fans. Now, this took away a little bit because right before that, stage one, you have a sprint. Everyone's expecting Groenewegen. He goes down in a crash with Geraint Thomas and a few others. And his teammate, Mike Chinesen, ends up winning the day trying to lead out Wout. I don't remember who he was leading out. Maybe he thought he was leading out Groenewegen. He takes a surprise win. Then stage two, you have the team time trial. Jumbo-Visma once again takes over and destroys everybody at two stage wins. They're on a high. Their day is good. Then Julian Alaphilippe ends up getting a win, gets a breakaway, pop up on a climb, solos into the finish, does everything he can. He's loving it. And they're like, oh, sweet. Alaphilippe does what he can. He's going to be in yellow for a little bit. But is he going to be overall winner? No, not a chance. And is he going to be even in the overall hunt? Not a chance. So, look. Thomas went down in a wreck. Fuglsang goes down in a wreck. The odds makers were not really liking probably their idea of what's going to happen. I think Thomas went down twice. But then, as I said, you had Alaphilippe coming in. Now, you're expecting him. He's going to start losing time, but he doesn't do it. So in the end, he ends up winning a stage time trial. No one expected him to be winning a time trial. It does put things into possible perspective of his how he was doing that race. Because does that make you want to think that maybe something was fishy? I don't know. Either way, sprinters all get their win. Groenewegen gets three. Caleb Ewan gets three. Groenewegen gets one. Viviani gets one. Sagan gets one. Wout van Aert gets one. But like I said, Giuliani, Alaphilippe then comes back in yellow with his impossible stage 13 win. Pino looked the strongest, dropping everyone, including Bernal, up to stage 14. But Alaphilippe wasn't cracking, and we were all expecting him to have that done. It took that freak of nature on stage 19 with the hailstorms and the mudslide to finally kind of derail him. Then the next day, you finally get Nibali with his stage win on a very shortened day, and they pop off Alaphilippe. He ends up overall getting fifth place in the Tour de France. Jumbo-Visma gets five wins with several riders, with Steven Kruijswijk third on GC. Ineos gets the overall with Bernal. Thomas in second, but once again, they failed to get a single stage win because stage 19 was a non-qualifier. Bernal wasn't spectacular to watch. He rode within himself, and the dynamic of Thomas and Bernal was clearly interesting. Pinot's absolute smashing climb was a sign of what he could be, as it was with Alaphilippe. So this next year, is Alaphilippe going to be a rider that changes a little bit? That will be something to keep in mind. And then I said, you've got Jumbo-Visma with their big, huge team coming in. You've got shortened times, races. You've got a time trial up La Planche Belfi, which was stage 6 of this year's Tour de France. But now it's going to be a time trial. Crazy times coming up. Tour de France 2019, my Grand Tour race of the year. Now, look, while the Vuelta didn't get my Grand Tour Stage of the Year, it was a close second. Perhaps the Tour was where the expectations of the Roglic type would have been effective, but he was doing the Giro, the Vuelta this year, and so he had those on him on the Giro, those expectations, but in the Vuelta, he significantly did. But maybe they were lacking a little bit because you're like, look, you just blew this one. But he ends up taking the reins. Look, the team comes in. They've got Sepp Kuss. They've got Nielsen Palace. They wreck pretty harshly on the prologue. They lose over a minute. So does Pogacar's UAE team. They lose over a minute as well. And those two teams are down. And what do they end up doing? They just put the locks on and come through in the finish. You know, look, Sepp Kuss gets a win. He gets a chance, but he was there supporting his team all the way. Tadej Pogačar climbs his way back literally onto the podium and then really solidifies it the last day in the mountains there, where only Roglic can basically stay with him. Movistar once again was confused their rivals and their fans with their strange team tactics. Sometimes it worked and sometimes it baffled. Always entertaining. Okay, how about the no-brainer result of the year? So there are, you know, some results you see and you go, oh yeah, it's going to be a no-brainer. How about we start off with the Tour Down Under 2019, Richie Porte winning on Woolloonga Hill. This has started back in 2014, stage five. It's continued 2015, 16, 17. 17, he had two stage wins, 2018 and 19. So read it, folks. That's six straight years on the same hill for the same guy. Different teams, same result. Will he do it in 2020? Tour Down Under. Stay tuned. That's coming up this next month. Wolfpack winning more races than all other teams. 68 in total. Compare that with Team Katusha at five. That's a no-brainer of the year as well. How about drama with Rohan Dennis? Quitting abruptly on stage 12 of the Tour de France the day before the individual time trial in Pau for the 27.2-kilometer test against the clock was not surprising. Issues with the team and equipment were rumored to be the reason Rohan was tight-lipped about it. He was sacked by his team in September prior to the UCI Worlds, where he destroyed the film and took home the rainbow jersey. Now, Rohan, he's on his teammate Garrett Thomas and Luke Rowe's podcast, he's claiming that he would left due to family issues. Well, this doesn't feel right to me, because as soon as you say, you know what, I left for family issues, no one is going to push you on that. At the time, that was not what the rumors were. So in the latest interview with Garrett and Luke, it's hard to push back, and I was a little disappointed in a few things. One, sound quality of the podcast, not so good, boys. The accents were tough to follow with bad sound quality, just throwing that out there. And then third of all, you can't really push Rohan when he's saying it. You know what it reminds me of? It's Lance's defense always with cancer. It's cancer shield. And, you know, kudos to Rohan for pulling that out of his bag. If it's true, you know, look, family always does come first. If it's not, it's pretty cheesy. Surprise result of the year, the Tadej Pogačar breakout year. He started with the Volta al Algarve, winning stage two and the overall, continued with California, like Algarve. He'd go on a stage in the GC. Individual time trial champion of Slovenia. Three stage wins at the Volta, along with a third-place podium. That was really impressive. He's just 21 in September, so he was 20 when he did all these things. Jakob Fuglsang, big surprise of the year. Early season success, one of the top picks for the Tour de France until his early crash. He had five wins on the year of Vuelta a Andalusia Grand Tour, the GC. He had the Trentino-Adriatico stage result. Liège, Bastogne-Liège, that classic there. That was really a great one to watch for him. The overall at the Crayem du Daphne when Froome faked his season-ending crash. And then stage 16 at the Volta. Solid from top to bottom, early to late. Really good year for him, winning in all kinds of ways. You know, that classic that put him on. You look, Liège and the Crayem du Daphne, two solid wins there. And to be part of the overall perspective with the Tour de France was pretty good too. How about Julian Alaphilippe? He had a breakout Tour de France. No one expected that from him. Mike Sayers came in here and said, I could see that. Good for you. I don't know that anyone else was. Well, everyone, look, he's got amazing talent, and any 7-day stage race, you can see him doing those things. But the way he rides, that's to me what was the most surprising, to see his aggression day in and day out. And then, you know, it ended up coming down in buckets, literally hail on him. Which kind of reduced his chances. Look, he's like a Tommy Volkler kind of guy, but with talent. I don't know if that makes sense at all. 12 wins in 2019, including the individual time trial in the Tour de France. Actually getting this result is what makes his GC riding almost unbelievable. Another breakout, Richard Carapaz winning the 2019 Giro. And then moving to Team Sky to share the leadership or work with Froome, Bernal, who else? Look, first rider from Ecuador to win the any Grand Tour. So very impressive. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what he does with Ineos this next year. How about some things that make you go, hmm?
Things that makes you go,
Well, Columbia is on the rise. Growing up in the 80s, watching the tour, you know, I was very excited to see all some of those riders, those teeny little Colombians that would come on the floor. They would smash it. Lucha Herrera, Fabio Parra. Very impressive to watch those guys. And now you've got Colombia on the rise with their win in the Giro and finally in the tour with Egan Bernal. But earlier in the year, you had the Tour of Colombia, which was a smashing success. Action Berman went down there. I think Illuminate team went down there. But you had a lot of, you know, Froome, Ineos, EF was down there, a bunch of the big teams. Anyone that had a Colombian, they were all on board. And the Colombians are kind of just coming out of the woodwork everywhere. It was such a big deal, the way their crowds were, especially on that last day. The crowds were all over the road. It was hard to even go up the road, watching the riders at least. But it has been such a big deal that you even had Brailsford reaching out to Colombia and rumors about them maybe coming on some Colombian something as a big sponsor. So, look, the way Colombia has taken over the Tour of France, you know, there's several of these big riders winning on the World Tour stage and their crowds. It's leading everyone to speculate what can happen with Colombia coming back up. And, you know, I think that Colombia is here to stay for a while. And I think that maybe some of this, you know, Tour of California is going out. Otherwise, you just have races over in the Middle East. Maybe Colombia is our next big place to have a race. I don't know. We'll see. How about the mailbag? We had some good info here. Tom Chandler, he wrote this. Hang on a second. He wrote, "If I was a marketing director, I'd suggest now was a great time to start sponsoring individual riders in gravel events." We got a lot of info on gravel here. "Those races and racers are getting a lot of coverage, and the brand isn't shelling out to sponsor a whole team of riders, 90% of whom will never generate an ounce of publicity. There might even be a perception the riders are using your gear because they like it, an assumption nobody makes about World Tour teams." Well, that's actually true. "Pretty good darn bang for your buck, at least while gravel's in the massive growth stage." The bike registration story sounds like classic contempt of cop citation. They love it when you insist on video. Yeah, exactly. Back to the gravel situation. So I get what you're saying there, but it might be a little difficult when you have one rider, like a Ted King or any of these these riders doing gravel, that, you know, they're just one person sponsoring this. But when you get a whole team out there showing your wares, it's a little bit different. I think maybe bigger bang for your buck, possibly, and that's maybe why you're seeing some of these riders go for it. Our very own Jonathan Baker chimed in. He said, "This coming gravel season, there will be multiple new full-time professionals entering the scene, either, as you suggest, as privateers with a mix of multiple sponsors, but also at least one I'm aware of, which will be a larger branded team with multiple riders." Oh, don't want to tell us who it is, though. "Economies of scale does offset a bit of extra cost there. Plus, if you have quality riders, it's a great opportunity to ruin gravel for some good old-fashioned roadie tactics." I really like that. Good comment. And look, I don't know much about the gravel stuff, but it's exciting. And, you know, we went in there out to Boonville and did the fish rock race. We didn't do the race. We did the ride or rock fish, whatever it is. And to me, that's probably not your most gravelly one because it's only a small section there, but it was a lot of fun. So good stuff. Jason Grafath commented, "Sorry for the second comment." Well, I guess maybe I should go through this first. "What did Jason say? Sorry, Kurt. Regardless of organization level, the race," talking about Nevada City, "has a longstanding as an unique and awesome event. Recently, the race has been way more organized than in the past. I'm looking forward to racing it this year, and thank you for everything that you do to make it happen." Oh, that's cute. Kurt Mills actually replied. So this is our "What did Kurt say?" Kurt directly says, "Jason Grafath, I think you mean everything I don't do to make it happen. I'm not a volunteer. I was just noting that I can't recall a year in the last 50. How old are you, Kurt? You're not 50. Or so that the race didn't occur. That is all. Sorry, Tyler put it on blast. Blame Tyler." I agree. Sorry for the second comment. Jason said, "Thumbs down on the Coffee Republic World Championships and for any group ride championship ride. What makes the idea awesome is also the reason it's not good. Having an extra competitive group ride is great, but calling it a championship encourages both negative and dangerous riding that ultimately gives the group ride a bad name. There's plenty of questionable behavior on the group rides without the extra eternal glory of calling it a championship. It can't be any worse than some of the ones I've done, the generic, they call it here in town. And that one, I think you only go through red lights. Pretty sure that's the way that one's structured. You got a point. But look, there's I don't know if it gets any worse than, you know, some of these others, but look, I'm just trying to get some excitement. That's a amazing course, and maybe we'd sneak it in, get it, do it real early sometime. Kurt Mills said, I also agree. I also blame Tyler for this. So there we're on. Jonathan Baker, last comment here. We all know Skenta is the only unofficial world championships that really count. Look, he's got a point. They hand out a legit prize with a stuff glued on there. You know, Ryan Oakes has come in here and talked to us about it. He had firsthand, I think he's touched it. He handed it to someone. So Jonathan Baker knows what he's talking. I appreciate him joining in on this newly crowned national champion. Well done. Okay, how about some winners and losers? I got some winners on the year. Rider of the year, I kind of hummed and hawed here. I was going to start with it, and I brought it down to here. Primoz Roglic, 13 wins in 2019, tied for second on the list of the wins with sprinters. Top winner was Dylan Groenewegen, who said of 15. Groenewegen is the top winner. He also had 4 GC stage wins, Primoz Roglic, 7 stage wins, 2 one-day race wins, 4 individual time trial wins, and then the Giro, he was 3rd. Tour de France, he didn't start. And the Vuelta, he was 1st. Pretty impressive. How about some losers? How about Fabio Aru and Taylor Finney? You know, I should probably start with just the losers, any of those that got popped for drugs this year. But we'll go with these two. Both have showed, you know, amazing promise in the few years, but they failed on all fronts to deliver this year. We'll see if Fabio Aru's move from UAE will make a difference. Another notable would be maybe TJ Van Garderen. He, like I said, had a great Dauphiné, but just kind of sucked it up in the tour and just didn't really have it. And I don't know. Maybe he's just past his prime. Maybe he needs to just stop trying to be a team leader. Well, actually, he really stunk it up in Tour of California too. His ride at the Tour of California was just interesting. Comes into the base of the climb. The team had been working all day for him for Mount Baldy. As soon as they hit the bottom, he's just gone. And then you just see Huerta and Pogacar going detonating in him and winning with those two guys sailing away. Look, do you have your winners and losers? I hope you had a good Christmas, whatever holiday you do. 2019 was pretty good. This is all obviously World Tour. We didn't even talk about on the local level, but we've kind of gone over some of those things. I talked about that with Jason Gerfath had got a big list of riders and their race results and stuff. So who wins it on the local scene? Well, I'm just going to call out Jonathan Baker, not just because he made comments here, but shit, he won the road race. He won, you know, our whole Northern California could be almost seen as riders of the year. When they go out to nationals, whether it's cyclocross with Jonathan Baker, when they go out to road and crit and time trial nationals out in Colorado this year, Baker, Team Thirsty Bear, Touchstone, and then even track world championships and national championships. Very impressive with on our national level and world level for all these guys. Very impressed with the Peets, the Touchstones, the Thirsty Bears, the R4R. Lot of amazing riders in this area. And I'm proud to race against them all the time. It keeps you up. And I mentioned this on the NCAA race. When I was growing up, and I would do racing. I grew up in the Northwest. We had a few good riders there. We had Greg Randolph came from there, Kirk Willett, some other good ones. But for the most part, it was if you could come to California and race and do well, or Colorado and race and do well, I found you go anywhere in your divisions and you can do well. So good for you if you're racing in California. If you think it's tough in your division, maybe just scoot on over to another state and see how well you do it. Not to say that those other states don't have great riders. They always have one or two that are, you know, beat you to death. But for the most part, this state here really puts it to you. And state of California, that is. If you're out there somewhere else and you want to come into California, we'd love to see some more racers. Come visit us. Come check us out any of the local races we have here. I know Southern California has a bunch. We have a bunch up here. And we're always proud to host some people and to show you what we have for our terrain. All right, so that's it for we have 100 episodes, 55 episodes this year. Not this year. This is 155 5th episode of the Between Two Wheels podcast. Thank you, everyone, for your participation this year. Share the show. We're on YouTube under Between Two Wheels podcast, on Facebook. Make any comments you want. Once again, I'm going to be doing a episode about the women riders, so give me any of the input you can. Instagram, Twitter, check us out there. Find us where you can. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a great 2020. We've got the San Bruno Hill Climb coming up. That podcast between was a B2 Wheels as the discount code, I think, is still available till the 29th. All the best to everyone, and keep the Riverside down.